Karatato, welcome to Asia Insight from the Asia New Zealand Foundation Te Whitu Tohono in Wellington. I'm Graham Acton. Until relatively recently, the Kingdom of Brunei was, for many New Zealanders, just one of those countries in Asia you couldn't quite pinpoint on a map. Well, it's on the north coast of the island of Borneo, and with its South China Sea coast, it is completely surrounded by the Malaysian state of Sarawak. Brunei is the only sovereign state entirely on Borneo. The remainder of the vast island is comprised of the Indonesian province of Kalimantan. As of 2020, its population was just over 465,000 people. It's also an absolute monarchy ruled by its sultan and run under a combination of English common law and, somewhat controversially, it also imposes Sharia law on its Muslim majority population. Brunei has been led by the current sultan since 1967, and the country gained its independence as a British protectorate in 1984. It's also an important member of ASEAN. The last 20 years has seen the country transform due to its extensive petroleum and natural gas reserves, and Brunei is nowadays seen as one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Brunei's relationship with New Zealand has been a warm one for many years, with links through education, defence and trade. And recently in this country was Brunei's second foreign minister, Irwan Yusof, who also worked as ASEAN's first envoy to Myanmar following the military coup. We sat down for a very brief conversation. I began by asking him for his assessment of the current Brunei-New Zealand relationship.
The purpose of this visit is to build up the very good relationship that we have between with New Zealand. And I very much thank the Foreign Minister, Nanaya Mahuta, for inviting me. The relationship between Brunei and New Zealand has been long standing and as well as quite warm and close. So we've worked together bilaterally in many issues of common concern and now on regional basis as well and international issues.
So you've been talking in New Zealand about ASEAN and how things are going with ASEAN. What are the current dynamics like within ASEAN given tensions in the region around US, China and strategic competition, other concerns? How are things going with ASEAN?
ASEAN just recently had a summit in Phnom Penh, and I assure you that the leaders and the region itself are confident to work together with both the major powers that you mentioned, namely the US and China, and they are also willing to work closely with ASEAN. The US has recently also became a comprehensive strategic partner of ASEAN, which China became last year. So this shows how they all want to work with ASEAN, and through that mechanism, be able to work together between the two.
How is Brunei managing the US-China competition that it's facing at the moment? You were speaking earlier today about the Cold War and how Brunei was sort of positioned at that time. How are things going now, and what's been the impact of the China-ASEAN Comprehensive Strategic Partnership that was signed last year?
Well, for Brunei, we take the ASEAN policy quite as close to us as a cornerstone of our policy, which is to engage. We are friends to both, and we work together with both. So that's the idea. We're not taking sides, one or the other, but our policy has always been to work together with China, to work together with the United States, and both of them knows that. So whatever I talk to the Chinese, I'll also talk with the United States and vice versa. With regards to the impact on the ASEAN-China Comprehensive Strategic Partnership last year, well, we've just signed the technical cooperation agreement. So through this comprehensive strategic partnership, it is to build further, deeper trust between the region and China and the region and all the other countries that we are going to have this comprehensive strategic partnership. So with China, this will help us build our own industries as well. They will come in and help build our industries through capacity building. Not by, not just by investing, but investing in people's capacity so that they are able to sort of develop and progress further.
What's the nature of that investment? What sort of things?
It's more in terms of the development of policies, development of programs, so that the countries develop, the countries can move on. I liken it to compare to what the Japanese did, you know, post the war in the 70s, 80s. The region, ASEAN itself, wasn't a developed region. So they came in, they helped us develop industries, agriculture, they provided, you know, technology transfer, and we developed from them. They, in the old days, the Japanese called them the JICA program. And now with the Chinese, this is the, they will have a similar one, which they come in, provide the expertise, and help us to develop our own industries.
It's manufacturing there rather than agriculture or anything like that?
In anything that the countries want. Right. So it's open. Countries can choose which area they want and they will come in with the development.
Just turning to Myanmar now, what's your assessment of the situation there and what has ASEAN done and what are they trying to do to keep things rolling and return democracy to Myanmar?
Well, let me just... The ASEAN Special Envoy, the Special Envoy of the ASEAN Chair to Myanmar rotates every year. So when Brunei handed over the chairmanship to Cambodia and now Cambodia is handing over to Indonesia, the Special Envoy also changes at that time.
You were the ASEAN Special Envoy to Myanmar. What's your assessment of the situation there and how things are going?
Well, things are not going very well. We've seen on the news that, you know, the continued killings and continued violence. But I think importantly is how do we encourage Myanmar to return to normalcy? And the recent summit in Phnom Penh, the leaders have agreed that the five-point consensus still is valid. That's very important because this is an agreement that the military leadership or the military junta agreed to with the other nine ASEAN leaders. So it's a promise that they will implement the five-point consensus. So we hold on to that. But yet over now almost 1.5 years since the five-point consensus were agreed upon, nothing much has moved on. So we continue to put on the pressure. ASEAN agreed that we should review what we have been implemented so far. At the leaders' level, there is an agreement that non-political representative shall only now attend. That has been carried on from last year. But leaders have also said we should also review what other ministerial meetings that should be represented at the non-political level. So these are the political tools in order to put or encourage, to see in another way, Myanmar to return to normalcy as soon as possible.
There's been a lot of talking at ASEAN about Myanmar, but the violence is still continuing, really, because the Tatmadaw feels that they're fighting for the sovereignty of the country, that they're keeping the country in one piece.
Sure.
How do you give the army an off-ramp, really, from its current position? Because it seems to me it's right up against a whole lot of groups that are diametrically opposed to it, and it will just keep on fighting them.
Yeah. Well, the five-point consensus, one of the five-point consensus is basically, of course, first, reduce or cease violence. We're looking at it at one side, but after this summit in Phnom Penh, the cessation of violence and the dialogue needs to start very quickly. And whilst it is also the SAC who has sat down, the senior general, Ming Aung Hlaing, sat down with all the leaders of ASEAN and agreed to the five-point consensus, it also applies to all the other stakeholders. So what happened at this year's summit is that leaders have now started to say, let's also engage with the others, the NUG, the CRPH, and what have you. And also pose the same question, can you also cease the violence and start dialogue? Because, you know, in a opposing situation like this, you need all sides to start sitting down together. You can't just have one without the other as well.
What's been the response from those groups?
Well, it hasn't been posed to them. So the new special envoy of the chair, which is Indonesia, will have to now look into that and start talking to both sides of the, well, to all sides anyway.
Is that person being permitted to go into Myanmar to do that?
Well, we haven't seen the formal appointment of the new special envoy yet, but we hope that that will be the case, because the last two special envoys almost had an open invitation into Myanmar.
ASEAN has been guided all the time through its existence by a policy of not criticizing other members' internal policies. Is this getting harder to maintain, do you think?
Not so. I think whilst we can't interfere in each other's policy, we do look at it in terms of the whole region. We do look at it in the whole region in the fact that if it affects the region as a whole, then we all can talk to each other. We don't have to make public announcement. We don't have to make loudspeaker diplomacy. In our own meetings, there are things that we talk about that are sensitive to each other, but one that is done in a very calm manner.
Just finally, I know you're short on time. Just my last question really would be, what will the new upgraded FTA mean for New Zealand and ASEAN?
Oh, I think it means a lot for all 10 of us, including New Zealand, because it includes the new methodology and the new way of doing business. E-commerce includes the small, medium enterprises. So I think a lot more participants, a lot more benefit can be distributed in the region, you know, in Australia and New Zealand. And I look forward to it being signed finally in the coming months.
Minister, thanks for your time. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this rather brief edition of Asia Insight. I've been speaking with Brunei's second Foreign Affairs Minister, Erwin Yusof. Thanks for listening. Ka kite anō.